Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC show brought to you by AdStage. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Prater.
And today is February 13th. Happy time to panic for Valentine's Day day. Tomorrow
it's here. Tomorrow.
Yep.
Chocolate day. Flowers. Diamonds. Chocolate. Wow. Chocolate diamonds.
Wow. That's Did you buy your wife chocolate diamonds?
Every kiss begins with K.
Someone's been getting a lot of ads for Valentine's Day. You're not alone. I was reading, it's not digital marketing per se, but the National Retail Federation has told us that the spending on Valentine's Day is going through the roof. So this year, $27.4 billion, which is an increase of 32% from last year's record $20 billion spending on Valentine's Day. So did you buy chocolate diamonds for your wife? Did you at least get her something nice?
No.
She'll never even listen, so...
No, that's, we don't really celebrate Valentine's. Her birthday is, like next week. So we always just do something bigger for her birthday. Right. So we do something smaller. We have our own little tradition that we do, but, absolutely shocked to see this like spending, for Valentine's. It's been, you know, up and to the right a little bit, but in the last 2 years it's just skyrocketed.
Yeah, it seemed like 20, they've been tracking since 2009, and it's been like, oh, yeah, going, and then I don't know what's getting into people this year. Maybe it's that booming economy. Thank you, President Trump. That's a joke.
We're going there. Here we go.
Yeah, we should go there. Let's stay positive.
Positive? Podcasting?
What?
Top 9 podcast, Paul.
Right, we did make top 9. We are one of the top. I don't know. What was the category? Paid search podcasts.
PPC marketing must listen to podcast. And guess what? You guys, we're hit. We're in the top 9. I'm like psyched on this. And because I recognize pretty much all those other podcasts. So to be in the same category as them, I'm psyched. Thanks you all for listening to Paul and I rant every week, most weeks, except for Q4 of last year. But
and JD occasionally reining me in before I go on Trump. I do want to take credit. I actually did a pretty good Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So I took the day off, which right off the bat gets me points.
That's right.
Because, you know, prioritizing the lady over work. And then we're going to the botanical garden because magnolias are in bloom. And we're going to walk around and view the 1,000 magnolia trees in the botanical garden. Picnic. Maybe a little champagne at the garden, depending on the weather. And then we get some massage at there's a Thai massage place over in Outer Sunset that is one of my girlfriend's favorites. Then back to Marin, where I live, to see Little Women, the movie that almost won an Oscar that my girlfriend's been dying to see and is almost out of the theaters.
Wow.
And then some dinner. And
that is a packed day.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very proud of it. Enough that I'm just telling everyone.
If you're out there and you're listening and Paul ever becomes single, this is the guy you want. True. You don't want to be, if I become single, I'm the guy that's going to like not do anything on Valentine's.
It's close Paul's to your birthday. So we'll just ignore it because, you know, your birthday. That's what every girl wants to hear. Like, well, you know, we're going to ignore the holiday because it's close to your birthday.
It's like all those kids that have birthdays near Christmas.
We'll skip Christmas because your birthday's right there. I did get chocolate in a card too. So I'm just saying. So spending, I'm saying this because I am in this category. I did spend whatever, probably if you average this out, I am in that category.
That's an expensive day. Yeah.
Spent a lot of money. In terms of banter, because we have a banter category, and I wanted to mention our friends over at Bitico. Bitico is a performance marketing agency. This is not a commercial. They did not pay for an ad. They've been customers of AdStage for like a billion years. And they did something really interesting. They took our dashboard. So, you know, we make like paid ad reporting and dashboarding and stuff like that. And sometimes agencies use it to like create a dashboard of all their ad accounts. So if you have like 100 customers or 200 or 20 or whatever, you can create like for a whole agency, here's how much spend we have under management. And most folks use it for internal, you know, internal reporting. They actually, on their website, you can go to bitico.com/open-metrics. And they actually use AdStage to power this like dashboard that shows their cost per purchase on Facebook and their return on ad spend across all their advertisers. So, and there's even a refresh button. I'm going to hit it right now.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I'm live refreshing our own dashboard. There you go. It already updated. Mere seconds. Huh. So it's a $23.54 cost per purchase using Facebook standard events in 2019. Good job, Biddy Co. Oh, there's a nice little chart. Anyway, I thought it was really cool. Very creative way somebody's using our product. So with that.
Hats off. Let's get into it.
Let's get into the news. All right. I started making fun of Trump, but we do have to talk about Bloomberg because he is really giving a masterclass on digital marketing. Have you been seeing Bloomberg ads everywhere?
Radio ads, yes. I haven't really. We were just talking about this. I obviously I'm not on Instagram, so I missed this entire meme thing that we're about to get into. But absolutely love. I put Lamborghini doors on the Escalade, the 50 cent line. I thought it was hilarious. I was definitely. ROFL, as was another great reply. So go check this out. So for those listening, and if you haven't seen this yet, I don't know where you've been for the last 24 hours, but they partnered with a ton of influencers, and these influencers that had these meme accounts. Paul, do you have any favorite meme accounts?
I do. Well, I mean, there's two I listen to, watch, whatever, and they have inappropriate names. Fuck Jerry, which a lot of people follow on Instagram.
Earmuffs.
And weirdly, the other one is called Fuck Advertising, which is also a great one to follow. They just more have really weird Photoshopped things that like break your brain a little bit. Fuck Jerry is pretty funny. That's Jerry Media. Fuck Jerry is the inappropriate name of the Instagram account for Jerry Media, which is the media company that Bloomberg hired and the one who did the Fire Festival.
Yeah,
remember
Fire
that
Festival. Yeah, yeah.
Epic
yeah.
fail of a festival. Well, he did his job. The people at Fuck Jerry, or I should stop saying this, the people at Jerry Media did a great job because that festival was well publicized and attended before it turned out to
the
be.
The egg, or the not the egg, they were the orange, right? The orange, everyone on the Instagram, right? Turned
right.
Orange, anyway. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they anyway, had a lot of great ones. And I did see them. I think you tweeted a few. I added one that I saw in real life on Instagram.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. The New York Times ran an article on it. Wired ran an article on it. You know, I came across some and I just thought it was just hysterical. I thought it was well executed. I think it's smart. I think it's clever. It's witty. It's self-deprecating. And that just makes it like that much better, you know, because he's like playing like the okay boomer, you know, like he is literally playing the guy of like, okay, send me a fax, you know, and you're like, no one faxes these days. Like, where are you? So, you know, it plays on his, I think he's 77. Is that right? Somewhere he's in the 70s. But anyway, really well done. I think, again, whoever's running their media, you know, hats off. And then also if you're doing influencer marketing, big FTC ruling this week, Paul, which I'm going to hold off if you got any comments though on the Bloomberg memes.
Just, you know, you and I were talking, we try to get most of our political rants out before we start recording, but, you know, anybody who's running against Trump needs to get Trump voters or swing voters or has to motivate people who normally wouldn't vote. So going after a bunch of liberals or a bunch of Democrats is not going to get you any votes, although he does need to win the primary. Therefore, he is spending $1 million a day on Facebook, primarily in swing states like not in swing states, rather in places where there's large primaries like California. So anyway, he's spending a lot of money to get those votes, but he needs to try to get young people who might not vote because they're apathetic to the entire political system. Can't imagine why, or swing voters. So obviously you're not going to get a lot of swing voters, but this way, but by using memes and speaking the language of millennials and below, I think this is a great way to get some early voters motivated to go vote for you, even though you're one of the oldest candidates running. Those are my comments.
It's good name recognition, right? I mean, at least you're going to walk away going, okay, cool. I at least know this candidate's name. So if I do show up in a ballot or I have my mail-in ballot and I happen to be voting today, this is top of mind and it was funny. So yeah, I could see it, you know, it might pull in some votes, but I think more than anything else, yeah, I'm with you. Brand awareness. But FTC ruled 5-0 in favor of doing some harsher ruling for influencer marketing. As we've seen, it's like taken off. There's tons of money getting behind it. And so they haven't decided on any like specific rules, but get ready for them. They're going to be coming. And basically what they're recommending and suggesting is that there needs to be more clear labeling for paid for post. Okay. So whenever, you know, you're working with an influencer, they have to be so clear this is sponsored. And then they're also going to be doling out harsher penalties to help disincentivize ignorance or avoidance. I love that one. To disincentivize ignorance.
You need a lot of money to get rid of ignorance. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously pretty easy to spin up a fake influencer account, buy a bunch of followers from some shady spot in Eastern Europe somewhere, and then plug into some influencer network and get paid. It's basically like the old days of display advertising. You create a bunch of fake sites, get a bunch of fake traffic, put them into an ad network that's got so much traffic that no one really is going to take the time to figure out where the traffic comes from, and then you package it up and you sell it as some great traffic through a reputable ad network. That's what, you know, the world is like in influencer marketing right now. You don't know who's legit and who is just some bot from some place that's magically creating followers. But FTC looks like they're trying to figure this out before it becomes more rampant.
Yeah, 5-0. I mean, that's impressive.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, when learning about memes in politics, apparently Mayor Pete tried to also have a meme go viral, and there was something called the Mayor Pete Dance.
What?
It was in another article where they referenced it, and it's a bunch of like old white people like doing some like scripted dance. It's not good at all. So it's how not to go viral. The mayor. It's as bad as you expect. Sad. Yeah. Buttigieg is, well, he's just a pretty dry guy. So when like, you know, I don't know how you get a meme out of that, but Bloomberg is too. Maybe he needs to hire Jerry Media too. You know what? I didn't see if Bloomberg's on the new social network, but we should go check. You're not, because you're Mr. I'm taking a break from social media apps, but there's a new one called Byte, B-Y-T-E. Yep. Are you on it? Are you going to download it?
No, but I'm all for this one. I just wish it would have stayed in its like past life. I think it went to die when Twitter bought it.
Right. So if you're not aware, the new social network Byte just launched last week. They already have over 1 million downloads. I think there's some debate over the numbers. Is it 1 million or 1.3? But everybody's saying pretty much over 1 million downloads in the first week. It's made by the former Vine folks. So if you remember Vine, that, as JD mentioned, got bought by Twitter, ran internally at Twitter for a while, and eventually got shut down. So it's the same, one of the founders, Dom Hoffman, is bringing it back, 6-second videos. And I signed up for it because, you know, TikTok. Because, you know, Chinese government, I've said it many times on the podcast. Also, as a point of validation, I listened, there's this guy, Sean, I don't know his last name, Puri, I think, P-U-R-I. He's the founder of this Blab. Actually, he's the founder of Blab, which was what I started the podcast on like 5 years ago. It was like a live streaming app. But before that, I'm forgetting the name of the app he started, which was like one of the foundational internet social networks. Oh, the name's escaping me. It's not Reddit, but it's like Reddit almost. It was big at the time, and he sold it to Yahoo. And he's, you know, he's one of the, like, I don't want to call them the fathers of the Bay Area tech scene, but he definitely was early in like the internet game. Anyway, long story short, he has a podcast, because who doesn't have a podcast? And they talked about they uninstalled TikTok because China. China. So it's not just me. I forget who the guy who does the podcast with. It's not Sam Altman, but it's like some VC that's well known, not just some like weirdo like me. Like this person has money and, you know, does investments, and they just took TikTok off their phone. It's a long way of saying I installed Byte this morning, and I looked at some 6-second videos, and it was actually kind of creepy. If you read the article, you'll see that people were saying, it's like kids saying inappropriate things was like the only thing on Byte when you first downloaded it. It's like 13-year-old boys making dick jokes like suggestive content. And it's like really, you know, what happens on the internet when adults aren't around. And that just kind of took over instantly. And then they tried to, you know, start filtering out some of that content, and comments were all just like porn bots trying to get like, you know, people to download porn. So it was totally out of control. But they started fixing some of the issues, put some filters in there. They changed the rating of the app from 12 plus to 17 plus.
Okay.
So
does that mean you're going to be running ads in it soon?
I mean, hey, they said they're going to launch like a network. I mean, they're already talking about monetization, which is ahead of the curve.
Head of WhatsApp, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, when WhatsApp was WhatsApp before Facebook, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you have a million users and you're talking about monetization. Slow down, Byte. But but I'm interested to try it, play around with the format. It is, you know, it's exactly the same as Vine. It's like very short form videos, which, you know, TikTok is now too. So it's essentially TikTok, but from the folks who built Vine. Oh, I should mention on TikTok. I don't know if you saw, I'll keep it simple. It's a really downer story, but TikTok, essentially someone killed themselves live streaming, which happens now. It's like a reality of live stream. And, you know, we've talked many weeks about, you know, TikTok needs to grow up as a social network and start handling all the issues that you see on Facebook Live and YouTube. So, you know, now this is happening on TikTok. And the question is, how do they respond? How do they prevent this? How do you take down live streams if they're streaming violent content or self-harm? And Byte is going to have to solve all these problems too. With 6-7 second videos, you can still have some terrible things happen. So what do you do when it's pornography or violence or any of this stuff? I don't know what you do. Good luck trying to figure it out, but I hope they do.
I got to throw one in here, Paul. This is hot off the presses. Pinterest shares fall 4% because Facebook has introduced a new app called Hobby. H-O-B-B-I.
Wow.
It's like Pinterest, but it's not Pinterest. It allows you to...
Brought to you by the rest of the Bay Area.
Imagine pinning everything, but then you track the progress of have you done this thing. So if I'm pinning standing desk and a shiplap fireplace, did I actually complete it? So now you're going to... you know, couple some project management boards, you know, it's like Trello meets Pinterest.
Wow.
Just what the world needs.
Fresh out the kitchen.
Yeah. Just came in, just saw it.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, it's what Facebook
does
best.
React in real time.
Yeah. Facebook, hey, not surprised. They see a product they can't do well, so they copy it. It does sound like this is a little bit different, but I mean, keep in mind, most things Facebook have launched as Facebook products fail pretty badly. Most of their most successful products they have acquired. So
yeah.
Before people freak out about Pinterest, remember their track record is pretty terrible. The one exception is probably, you know, Instagram copying most of Snapchat's features. But even that was when Instagram was still pretty Instagrammy. Now that they're, you know, Instagram by Facebook, I don't know if they're even as nimble, but and still Snapchat has like innovated themselves out of that loop. It seems like Snapchat's still surprising to me. I picked on them for like a year, but they've innovated themselves out of that trap. So I'm sure Pinterest can as well. I think they have a really authentic product that's hard to copy.
We shall see.
True. Speaking of buying things, LinkedIn does the opposite. Facebook buys things, turns them into successful businesses. LinkedIn buys things, and then they usually go out of business and you never hear from them again. Including Reportive. So back in 2012, LinkedIn bought Reportive, rebranded it as Sales Navigator for Gmail. Basically, when you entered an email, it would give you like a bunch of profile type information about the email address. So their LinkedIn profile, their Twitter handle, maybe some little tidbits of information. If you had any connection to sales at a company, you probably used it. But LinkedIn bought it. The guy who built it actually is the founder of Tech Darling Superhuman. So this like new email company called Superhuman, which if you're in the Bay Area, is like, he did like a gated sign up. If you want to use Superhuman, it's like an email. It's basically email, but it's got artificial intelligence built in to like be your virtual assistant. You have to get on the wait list and it's very exclusive. So of course, everybody in the Bay Area is like, oh, Superhuman. And then, you know, there's a little thing in your email sent by Superhuman. So you could prove to your friend you're cool. Anyway, he knows what he's doing. He sold that company to LinkedIn, Reportive. Then he left and he brought his bright ideas with him and started Superhuman, which just raised $6 million. And LinkedIn just kind of let the product putter around for a while and will be shut down sometime in March.
Boo. All right. Quick update here. WhatsApp hits 2 billion users, Paul, encrypted messaging and no ads, really. I mean, you think about it, there's no ads. I think they have like you can pay for like business profiles or something, but...
Yeah, they backed off ads. They were going to do ads in like a little discover tab. I forget what it's called, trends or something. but then they backed off adding ads to WhatsApp. Yeah, I think you pay more like Facebook Messenger, where if you like engage with your customers so many times, you might have to pay to communicate or something like that. But $2 billion, the Zuckerberg empire continues to grow.
Yeah. Another thing that was bought. Sorry. Looker.
Yeah.
Google. Yeah. Remember when they bought them?
Yeah. Yeah. It's official now. I saw the news. $2.6 billion. And yeah, once you announce an acquisition, like it has to get approved. I think the SEC, if you're big enough, cares. And, you know, then you go through a bunch of paperwork and crap like that. So it's official. If you're now using Looker, it's a Google product. But I wonder, like, what happens to the Data Studio team? Because it's essentially the same product, right?
I think they stay. So here's my theory. Looker will go into cloud. So this is going to help compete against AWS, Azure, to make them more sophisticated in their cloud offering. Data Studio, just different market. I think that's going to stick with your SMBs, you know, your marketer salespeople, rather than actually being a BI tool.
So, like, just my Looker, so you graduate out of Data Studio when you're big enough to like get a BI visualization tool?
Yeah, yeah.
It just seems like they're building the same product in many ways.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. How do you, like, pie charts? I mean, if you know, we build a data visualization product too. It's not that complicated at the core. It's like, you know, how do you build a pie chart and line chart? And, you know, how do you pick the data sources? And how do you blend the data? Like, there's... And they're doing it twice now. They have like Data Studio team working on it and Looker. So I wonder if they're going to merge the teams, or if they're going to, there's going to be a roadmap, or do they just rebrand Looker as like BI, kind of like it's part of the 360 upgrade when you like upgrade out of Data Studio.
Anyway, that was my understanding. It was more enterprise.
Yeah, for sure. I know the people that use it are usually big companies that pay a lot of money, and it has like all data. Data Studio is still kind of more marketing data-ish. Those are the people who I think seem to be using it, where Looker is like, you know, but my internal Looker, widget.
Santa Cruz, Paul, based in Santa Cruz.
That's, you know, right. I know
downtown
that.
Downtown Santa Cruz.
I know that. Because you told me. And that's also because I got some cold outbound from the Looker sales rep saying, hey, well, I'll tell you more details about the Google acquisition next week. Contact me to like meet or something like that. I noticed it was from Data Studio. I looked up the guy on LinkedIn. And then I didn't, like, I was going to email him back and be like, bro, this is the worst cold outbound ever.
I just thought maybe they'd be like, cold outbound, we're looking for a chief product officer. We just got acquired for $2.6 billion. Come on board.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, and you were talking about how this got acquired. I don't know if you saw this again, I'm interjecting another one here. Harry's. Remember Harry's, our D2C brand?
Mm-hmm. Shave Club, right? It's like a Dollar Shave Club competitor.
Yes. So they announced that they were going to get acquired for $1.4 billion, and then it got not agreed upon. So they backed out because they were afraid of government getting involved. Wow. Like, so again, you think, I'm going to get acquired for $1.4 billion, and then the deal falls through, right? So it was announced. It was going to happen. Government says, well, actually, you know, we're not into that. And then they back out.
Oh. Well, you know, I did see this news. Like the FTC
out there, you know,
or whoever approves these things, just shut it down. Yeah. You have to get approved. If you're going through a merger acquisition and you're big enough, then, you know, the FTC has to approve. I think the FTC in this case, I don't know. I never know if it's the FTC or the SEC, but I'm looking at the headlines now. FTC blocked the Harry's Razors startup sale to Schick. Ooh, yeah. I need a pop filter if I'm going to say Schick on the podcast a lot.
Anyway, I know we're getting it outside of the digital media realm, but Harry's was built upon ads. It was built as a D2C company. You know, it was like one of those things that we all herald. It's like, look, D2C can work. All you need is just to run Facebook and Instagram ads. Look, you can do it.
Yeah, you know, do you think that's ending? Up. I mean, because
oh man, yeah,
for a while now it's been like, man, all you need is some copycat product from China that can get drop shipped or fulfilled from Amazon, and you could become a millionaire with an Amazon store or selling Shopify. On Shopify. Yeah, it's like, and if it, you know, now it's just nonstop. I get ads nonstop for like, you can sell millions of dollars of inventory. And whenever people are selling it, the course, it means they can't do it anymore. Because if you're making millions of dollars selling some crap on Amazon, guess what? You're going to keep on doing it because you're making millions. You're not going to be like, you know what? Well, I'm going to tell other people how to take advantage of this. So I stop making millions. Just my two cents. Anyway, you think it's going to keep going or what?
I mean, I think we got a couple more years for it to run out. I just think eventually, kind of like what we're seeing with Casper, it's just the unit economics are just not there. So I think we'll see VC money dry up a little bit. And then I think we'll start to see other companies start to like wind things down. It's just not working. It's not there.
Yeah, I wonder what happens with the ones that have been acquired now, because there's been a handful of D2C that have got acquired. So like Nordstrom's bought whatever that box is to try and close, and somebody bought Dollar Shave Club too.
Yeah, I can't remember who. Yeah. PG,
Puck somebody. Yeah, but like there's like four or five of those brands that got acquired, like Sealy or some of the mattress companies bought one of them. And a Purple, did Purple get acquired? One of them got acquired. Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe if those all turn out to be terrible investments, it's over. But if those brands can actually continue to run those successfully. Yeah, like Walmart just spun out the one they bought. Like they bought
Bonobos. Yeah, Bonobos. Yeah.
I don't know how to say Bonobos, whatever it is. So if they keep failing like that, maybe the party's over. The D2C party's over and we missed it. Boo. Personally, we missed it. All right, a few stories about YouTube. Who is this? App Annie. I know a bunch of folks over at App Annie. They put out a study about how much people use YouTube. 7 out of every 10 minutes spent on YouTube worldwide on Android phones. Or yes, I kind of said that right. 7 out of every 10 minutes were spent on YouTube worldwide on Android phones. So if you have an Android phone, you're watching anything on video, you're probably watching YouTube. It's insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. But I think it also just shows, too, again, it's Android. Google owns Android. Google owns YouTube. Yeah, I'm sure they make it really easy. But at the same time, people still have to, like, watch. You know, they still have to sit there. So 7 out of 10. I don't even know what to say to that.
If you look at the other 10, like, Netflix is number 6, and then everything else is like Chinese companies you wouldn't use if you're not in China, like Tencent News, Tencent Video, Baidu, something. But YouTube number 1 and just like above everyone else dramatically. And in fact, so much so, you're talking about the this kind of monopoly type effect where you own the phone, you own the browser, you own the operating system, you own the video network. Well, now YouTube won't even let you buy YouTube. If you're going to like buy the YouTube subscription for $50, it used to be called YouTube Red. I think it's called YouTube Premium now. You used to be able to buy it. Like if you're on an iPhone through the App Store, or if you're in Spotify, you could buy it through Spotify. They won't let you do that anymore. If you want to buy YouTube, you can't buy it like through the App Store on iTunes. You have to buy it directly from a website, like from a Google Home website, because they don't want to share the revenue, the 70/30 revenue split, where Apple gets, 30% of revenue. They don't want to pay that anymore. So they're saying, hey, we'd rather, and if that's the way you paid for it, and it's a monthly subscription, they're going to cancel your subscription. That's craziness. Who cancels? You know how much revenue they're making right now from people paying for YouTube Premium through iTunes? They're willing to turn that off to not rev share with Apple. So that's Google versus Apple.
That's the mind games that they're playing, you know? Anyway. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
What else we got? Instagram. This one's yours. What's going on with IGTV? Watched some IGTV.
Did you? Did you like it?
Yeah. It's just like a story that doesn't end in 7 seconds or however long stories are.
So how do you monetize it? Well, you got to put ads in it. So now they're going to be opening up, putting some ads into there to help monetize their content for creators. Again, now the problem, I'm a creator and now you're putting ads in the middle of my videos, you know, whatever that may be. So I don't think they really necessarily have the support of the creators, even though this is how the creators can monetize. So there is this kind of give and take. Like, hey man, you're renting this audience off of Instagram, and now we're not only are you renting it, like we're going to actually pay you. And now you're like, I don't like that. I don't like it. I don't like your ads. Get out of here. And it's like, come on, man. Like, this is, you all knew that this was coming. You all knew that this was coming. So anyway, that's something to look forward to next time you're on IGTV. Maybe some, you know, pre-roll, maybe some ads in the middle. I could see happening.
Yeah, you know, I was watching YouTube because 8 out of my 10 minutes are spent on YouTube if I'm watching video on my phone. And I was thinking, man, it feels more and more like television because YouTube has these like unskippable 5 second or 10 second spots now. They start putting two back to back. So I'm watching like 2 5-second unskippables. And I was like, man, it's starting to really feel like TV and TV commercials. So maybe we'll end up back with the same formats we had on good old fashioned TV.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested too. I'm interested to see what happens at this one. Again, I think this is IGTV is trying to take on YouTube. They're trying to take on, you know, TikTok, and they've convinced all these, you know, influencers and creators to create all this amazing content, you know, short term, short form and long form. And, you know, how do you do that rev share? And naturally that's ads because that's what they're good at. So right. I think it makes sense.
Speaking of ads, I want to talk about Amazon a little bit, and then we should end with the Hannapin story, your old buddies in Hannapin. But first, Amazon, there's two stories. One, from Forbes, I shared a link to a article about how Amazon advertising is great. You get higher returns, better ROAS, sell more, profit more if you use Amazon ads. It's by a agency that focuses on Amazon ads. So it's it feels a little biased, but so few articles out there about Amazon ads and like how it's positive. Most people are usually complaining, saying, you know, there's no margin in Amazon, and then they want you to pay for the ads on top of it. And they're kind of very disgruntled about the fact that they're buying ads on Amazon. Well, this person says 73% of respondents in the survey she's using now advertise on Amazon, which is up from 57%. So whether people like it or not, at least the 1,000 brands that were sampled, 73% of them are now advertising. And there's a bunch of stats about how like their return on investment is so strong and Amazon is great.
I mean, they got a lot of signal. There's a lot of intent. I mean, it's very low funnel. So yeah, of course it makes sense. It's just, again, you know, you don't control that customer experience. You don't get to control that branding. You don't necessarily get that customer list. You know, there's a lot of things that are like really tough there. But hey, if the ROI is there, what do you do?
Right. Yeah, I guess if you can make money on Amazon, obviously you do it. And just a lot of folks I know say it's almost impossible for them to make much money. You know, they do all this work and then they make like 2% and they're like, it's just not worth it. Shipping all this inventory, dealing with returns, you know, reviews, updates to, you know, rank well, competitors copying your product if you do well. But in this article, there's some good arguments to do all of it nonetheless. And lastly, I just threw this in there because I saw that Amazon is suing the Pentagon. If you're following Jeff Bezos and Trump's, you know, feud, you know, there was this big contract out from the Pentagon for JEDI is the name of their joint something, something defense, something. Basically, they want to like build, I don't know, some database. And they were debating like, who should we use, Amazon or Microsoft, like AWS or Azure? And they picked Azure. And then Amazon came back and said, well, you picked Azure because the president interfered with your selection process, and that is illegal, so we will sue you. And whether it's a good lawsuit or not, I just think it's funny that Bezos is basically using the Trump trick of like, when something happens you don't like, just start by suing them because you have lawyers and they don't, and you could, you know, intimidate them and overwhelm them with lawyers and law firms. So Amazon can now do that to the U.S. government, similar to what Trump may do to folks he doesn't like. So I don't know where it goes, but it's just kind of funny that Amazon is now suing the Pentagon for the process. Last story, your old place of business, 2 jobs ago, Hannapin had a big announcement. What's the latest?
Yeah, the latest, they just announced that they're going to be merging with Brain Labs. So they were acquired by Brain Labs. If you don't know Brain Labs, they're performance agency over in London, and they've been looking to of course grow their influence as well in the US. So last week they announced that they were acquiring Distilled, which is an SEO agency, Based in London, I think, as well. And now they're getting Hennepin, which is helping on that like PPC aspect. So they just acquired two agencies in 2 weeks, which is impressive just to do two acquisitions at the same time. That's pretty impressive. Right. But yeah, so we'll take a look out for them. I think that puts them around like 350 people maybe as far as staff-wise. And they're looking to acquire, I think from the article, it said like 10 to 15 more agencies over the next 3 to 4 years.
Right, which is crazy. But I know a ton of folks who are trying to sell their agency. So go call the people over at Brain Labs and be like, hey, here, got some money, money to spend. But remember, Hennepin, not only in do they have a successful agency, but they also have good content, right? You know, the Hero Conference is a pretty popular conference, and then PPC Hero as a content destination. So, you know, they were smart about really getting in early on the content marketing piece and investing heavily in that. And I feel like that is a huge asset that came with the deal. So if you're just like an agency with like five people and, you know, 30 accounts, I don't know if they care, but if you have a nice asset like that, give them a call.
Yeah.
And there was a number in here too, which was interesting. Cause again, maybe people who listen to this own, you know, these small agencies, or you're like a freelance type, but last year there was 1,100 mergers and acquisitions in marketing services around the world. And, traditional global advertising networks represented a smaller proportion of those deals, just 3% as compared to 9% in 2016. So there are agencies being bought and sold. So
yeah, it's crazy.
So I do believe.
I mean, start following Dan Gilbert over there at Brain Labs or tweeting at him, letting him know. But no, I mean, hats off to the Hennepin team and Brain Labs and Distilled. I know for those that are not familiar, that are listening, you know, all have done really well as far as getting their name out there, performance agencies. You know, they're not the Ogilvies that we hear of or the McCanns, but, you know, this is a performance. I'm sure most of you out there listening are performance people. So
that's right.
All right.
Us performance folks. Great. Well, those are all the headlines we have this week. So if you want more, you can sign up for the blog over at blog.adstage.io. Sign up for the newsletter is what I meant. You could sign up for the blog, but really what you get.
Yeah, the newsletter, the blog, and more of my techno music or what kind of music would you call that?
Yeah, that was some, I don't know, EDM, you know?
EDM, yeah.
But if you didn't hear last week's episode, make sure you stick around to the very end.
Those last 20 seconds are gold.
Right. I left a nice gap. It's like a secret song for those of you old enough to remember secret songs on tapes and CDs, I guess. It's a bit of a secret song on last episode where JD really, really brings the house down.
I think that should be our new theme song. We should look into it.
Oh.
We should do it.
I could do it this
outro
week.
Outro.
Yeah, maybe next. Maybe. Yeah.
Intro, outros.
Just we could just play that the whole time and skip the podcast. Ratings would go up. All right, everybody. Enjoy your week and enjoy this outro music.
Revenue Roundup. Revenue Roundup. Revenue Roundup. Revenue Roundup. Revenue Roundup.